How to Help Your Audience Remember, Part 3. Hello, I'm Malcolm Cox, and welcome to Tuesday Teaching Tips, episode 217. And this is the third in a three-part series on how to speak, how to preach and teach in such a way that the people we speak to will remember what we've been talking about. In other words, part of the responsibility for someone like myself, and perhaps you if you're doing teaching and preaching, is not just to speak in an entertaining way, an informative way, an inspiring way, or simply to speak things that are true, but to do so in such a way that we help our listeners remember it, and then they can go and use it, not just now, but in the future. So much of the scriptures, so many of the prophetic teachings, the Psalms, and much else, are presented in such a way to help us to remember them. Indeed, even the Lord's Prayer in the original language would have rhymed, and that would help people to remember it. So I'm questioning myself, and perhaps asking us to question ourselves, as to, are we thinking enough about teaching and preaching in such a way that people will be able to remember, to recall, and then reuse the material that we're teaching? And part of this comes from having read a book recently, which fascinated me, called Making Things Stick, or Make Things Stick. What's the exact title? Make It Stick. That's it. Make It Stick. It's a secular book, but it's grounded in really good research with some anecdotal stories that helped me at least to understand the significance of learning better how to teach others so that they will remember. So that's where this is all coming from. Let me give you a quote from the book, Make It Stick. On page 101, they say this: trying to come up with an answer rather than having it presented to you, or trying to solve a problem before being shown the solution, leads to better learning and longer retention of the correct answer or solution, even when your attempted response is wrong, so long as corrective feedback is provided. What they're saying is that we learn better when we've been part of the learning process, attempting to solve a problem, trying to come up with our own answers. In other words, the educator's responsibility is not to provide all the answers, all the solutions. And that's also true for those who preach and teach. We don't have to provide all the answers. So that's why we're going to talk about puzzles and questions today. First of all, puzzles. Next time you preach or teach, why not set your group a puzzle? Jesus did this in Matthew 21, verse 25. Jesus said, John's baptism, where did it come from? Was it from heaven or of human origin? They discussed this among themselves. So he gave them a puzzle. And in fact, his opponents in this context discussed it amongst themselves, trying to solve the puzzle. And they said to themselves, if we say from heaven, he will ask, why didn't you believe him? And they go on to discuss their options. Jesus is setting them a puzzle that helps them to figure out what they believe. Now they oppose him. It's not a happy outcome for them in a sense. But he doesn't give them an answer. He sets them a puzzle and they have to work out what they think. An example of how you or I might do this is from the book of Philippians. Let's have a look here in Philippians. Here's a way you could do this. So compare these two verses in Philippians chapters 2 and chapter 4. First of all, chapter 2, verse 28. It says this: therefore, I am all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad, and I may have less anxiety. That's the key word here. I may have less anxiety. So Paul says that in Philippians 2, verse 28. I may have less anxiety. Flip over the page, chapter 4 and verse 6. Paul then tells the Philippians, do not be anxious. That's what he says in chapter 4, verse 6. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Hang on. So in chapter 4, Paul says, I'm going to have less anxiety now. And then in chapter 4, he says, oh, you lot, no anxiety. It's a command. Don't be anxious about anything. Is Paul contradicting himself? It seems unlikely, given Paul's spirituality, but also the fact that he wrote both chapter 2 and chapter 4 and surely would have noticed himself contradicting himself. So what's going on here? What does this mean? And so you could set your group a puzzle here and say, how do we reconcile this? You might be preaching on anxiety, for example, and you could take a small break of 5 or 10 minutes and put people into pairs or groups, or perhaps if it's a small group, the whole group could then discuss and debate, how do we reconcile this, and perhaps come back and present their solution to this puzzle. Then you can go on and talk more about it. I think I might use that idea myself in some future sermon. Chapter 2, chapter 4. So that's an example of a puzzle. Jesus set puzzles. Why not set a puzzle the next time you preach or teach? The second way to do this is to ask an open question. Asking an open question. Again, Jesus did this. For example, in Matthew chapter 22, verse 42, Jesus said, what do you think about the Messiah? Whose son is he? The son of David, they replied. Now notice that he doesn't say, I'll give you a multiple choice. Was he the son of David? Was he the son of this? Was he the son of that? He says, what do you think about the Messiah? Whose son is he? So it's a very specific question, but it's open. And that allows the people listening to him to come to their own conclusions, or at least express their own ideas. And they may be right, they may be wrong, and then Jesus can give them feedback on their answer. But they get a chance to answer. And I dare say that helped them remember what happened that day. What could we do similar to that? Well, let me give you an example. From Luke chapter 7, we have the amazing story of the raising of the widow's son in Luke 7 verses 11 down to verse 17. There's quite a few amazing things in here you could ask a question about, but let me give you one example. In verse 14, he went up, this is about Jesus, he went up and touched the bier, touched the platform they were carrying the body on, the sort of stretcher coffin idea here. He touched the bier, they were carrying him on, and the bearers stood still, and then he says, young man, I said to you, get up. I think it's quite an extraordinary thing that Luke records that Jesus touched it. Now, firstly, there must be something significant in it, or Luke wouldn't have recorded it, I think. But secondly, we need to ask ourselves, why would Jesus touch it? And that's a question you could throw out to the group. Why do you think Jesus touched the bier? Again, you're not saying, did he do it for this reason, or this reason? Just ask an open question and see what comes back, and it may enrich your own preaching and teaching. I've done this on a number of occasions, these kinds of open questions, and I've had my own answer, which sometimes if it doesn't come up through the group volunteering their answers, I might give my own answer. Sometimes the answer is shared, and then I can say, well, that's what I think too. And sometimes people come up with an idea, and I think, actually, that's better than my answer. And so if I'm humble enough, I'll say, that's better than my answer. Here's mine, but I think yours is better. And sometimes that even changes what I then go on to teach. One of the great things about setting a puzzle or asking open questions is that you then know more accurately what your audience are thinking, what matters to them, and then you can adjust your teaching subsequently to what you're finding out. And if we don't know our audience and we don't know what they're thinking and feeling and what they believe in, and then we don't know as much as we might well know or should know or could know or would be good to know to be able to preach and teach accurately according to the needs. I really recommend these: setting a puzzle, asking a question, see what comes out of it. And I really believe it will help not only your preaching and teaching, but it will help your audience to remember. This makes such a big difference. I would make one other suggestion in this regard, which is that I'm recording this in the time of the COVID-19 pandemic, and at the moment we're having church online. So what you might want to experiment with, if you're using Zoom or some other facility, is the use of breakout rooms during the service. That can be a good way to have some puzzle solving or question discussion amongst groups. If you're on Zoom, you could break everybody into groups of three or four or five, have some discussion for a few minutes, and then come back and people can share their answers to the puzzles or their ideas to the questions that you have asked. So use those. Finally, in conclusion, remember this. Firstly, respect the intelligence of your audience. Your audience is intelligent, especially those of us who have been around a while as Christians. We've had a long time to think about some of the issues of our faith. Respect the intelligence of your audience. Remember the value of people learning from each other. I hope people learn from what I say, but I've often noticed that some of the most powerful teaching is from one member to another in the audience as they share ideas together. So remember the value of people learning from each other. And thirdly, reflect on the fact that you are not the one with all ultimate understanding. You have one view of a passage or a topic or an idea. I have one view. I try to bring in other views by reading the commentaries and so on, but I don't have all of it. And so often I've been impressed and inspired as people in the congregation have shared things during a lesson that I've thought, that's brilliant. I wish I'd thought of that, but I'm glad somebody expressed it. So remember all these things, and I think we will help our audiences to not only remember what's been taught, but take it in, and then find that they will be able to then bring it back to mind and be able to use it in future contexts of their lives. Well, I hope you found this mini-series helpful. If you've got other thoughts on how we can help our audiences remember important things, and do let me know. Drop me a line. Next week, I'm going to be answering a question from a subscriber. Thank you for the question you sent in. I'm going to be answering a question about hermeneutics and history and how we make sure that teaching historical context doesn't become dry. So that's coming up next week. If you have any thoughts, drop me a line, malcolm@malcolmcox.org. You can leave a comment anywhere you hear. You'll see this recording. If you know anybody who might benefit, pass the link on. If you haven't already done so, hit that subscribe button and then you'll be the first to know about the next episode when it comes out. Thanks for watching. Thanks for helping me out with your ideas and questions. Until the next time, I hope you have a terrific Tuesday and a wonderful week. Take care and God bless.